Discipline is the secret to success.
Self-discipline is everything.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
The only way to do great work is to love what you do.
What are you going to do?
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the TrainAid Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan, and this is the podcast where we speak with high performers to find out what they do every day to be the best at what they do. Today, we are continuing on the MMA train with another one of our Kiwi UFC stars coming on. Today, we'll be talking to the one, the only, Smokin' Shane Young. Shane is a professional mixed martial artist from Auckland, New Zealand, who is currently signed to the UFC featherweight division. Shane is known far and wide not only for his athletic abilities inside the octagon, but for his advocacy work in the areas of mental health and youth suicide prevention. And that is exactly what Shane and I are going to be talking about in today's episode. We'll speak about his early career in MMA, facing Alexander Volkanovski in his UFC debut, his own battles with mental health, and how he uses different training methods to stay physically, mentally, and spiritually on top of his game. This is an awesome episode with advice that everyone can take on board. So let's get to it. We are recording, which means we are live. So back for another episode of the TrainAid Performance Podcast. Now, joining us today, one of New Zealand's top UFC athletes, Smokin' Shane Young. Smokin' Shane Young, you've recently swapped from sugar to smoking. What's going on there, Shane?
That was like a couple of things. First off, I didn't get to give my... You shouldn't really give yourself a nickname, but Israel gave himself his nickname, and he always told me, like, that's a dumb rule. But I got given it by a guy that I barely even know. It was a ring announcer who just announced it. And then Wikipedia and stuff just ran with it. And I just like had a sort of a chip on my shoulder about it. So I decided when I was heading to Dubai on our first class flight last year with Carlos, I was like, actually, I'm going to pick my own nickname. And I was watching The Mask, which was like one of my favorite movies growing up. But I watched it again on the flight. And there's when he first comes out, he's just put on his mask and he comes out and he's like, smoking. And I was like, oh, that's it right there. The first thing that popped into my head when I heard it, I was like, who else has been called Smokin'? And it was Smokin' Joe Frazier, who I've always like been a bit of a history buff, with boxing. And some people probably wouldn't even know who Smokin' Joe Frazier is, but without guys like Smokin' Joe Frazier that was one of his biggest rivals. So without the greatest wouldn't have been the greatest without one of his rivals. And also Smokin' Joe Frazier didn't really have post fighting. He didn't really have that great of a life. And I was like, I like beating up superstitions. I'm going to make that a really good nickname because it probably doesn't have the greatest connotations attached to it. Try and make my own luck with it.
Just own it and live it. That's cool as. But Shane, I was actually looking around because I was going to just watch a couple interviews that you've done before, but you don't jump on heaps of podcasts, hey?
No, I get offers all the time to do it. And I tend to put myself in a lot of trouble with my mouth. So I'd rather do it with good friends like yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll have to watch what we say then. But we'll go into all sorts of stuff, man. I think... it's interesting for you guys. This is why I wanted to get you guys on the podcast, because obviously, like, I'm quite good mates with all of you guys. We've worked together for quite a long time. You get to know you guys quite differently, and people, when they see you guys on TV and they see you in fight week, like, you're in animal mode. You're in complete animal mode when it comes to fight week, and then you get in the cage and you just turn into whatever beast you need to be to get that job done, and then they don't see you until you do all that again. But there's like so much more to you guys, and there's so many levels to it. Like, the psychological side of it has always fascinated me, like what you guys go through to get to that cage. And then even on top of that, all the physical things you get. But it's funny how like none of that ever gets highlighted. It's just that 15 minutes in the cage. That's why I wanted to get you guys on. And people always ask me, they're always like, oh man, get your fighters on. It's like, you know what? I'm going to create a platform so like the listeners can get to know you guys a bit more like I do. So that's the whole point of this chat.
Awesome. That's cool, bro. Yeah, that's me. I'm glad you're doing it.
So let's go into it, because you've been fighting for ages. If anyone, especially in Australia, shout out to XFC Australia, who's been around for ages and ages. You were the pin-up boy for them for years. Like, I think I remember seeing a poster with you on it. This is ages before I even got into this, and seeing you on there, and I was like, who's this baby face looking guy? But is that where you started your MMA journey with XFC? Or take us right back. Like, when did you start training? How did it come? Why did you do it? And talk us through that journey.
Oh, cool. Oh, yep. Oh, yeah. So way back, I started when I was 14, towards the end of my 14th year on this earth. And that was with one of my best friends. His name's Evander Agnew. Shout out to Evander. He and I were actually the first thing that I ever did that became was a hobby that turned from a hobby to something that I became really passionate about was street art or graffiti. I don't know why, but for me, it was just really cool to see myself do creative things, and I'd spend hours and hours and hours at night just sketching, and then go make up this plan of what this, you know, not like, I don't mean tagging like, oh, squiggle. I mean, like, they're called pieces, which is short for masterpiece. And you'd spend, you know, like 5-6 hours designing this piece, and then you'd sketch it all out, and then you go to a wall, and you'd have this rough outline of what the words and the letters, the letter form, you would call it, what it would look like, and then you'd make up on the spot like colors, color combination, all the while knowing that this is an illegal activity and there's the potential to be caught. And so it's just like this massive adrenaline rush at 14, just being like, yo, they're doing this stuff. So we formed like a really tight bond through that. And he one night we were doing, he's like, man, I've been doing this boxing type stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm not really into that, bro. Not really a confrontational sort of dude. We'd had a few run-ins with like security. We'd had a few run-ins with other riders. And I just, you know, it was just pretend. You'd be like, oh, yeah, bro, I'm going to smash you. And then that was enough. They'd be like, oh, okay, you can have this place. Like, sorry for going over your piece. But yeah, he convinced me that it was like wrestling, which was, like rugby. Like, you know, I was playing rugby at the time. So I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Then we went to this place and everyone was punching and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is a bit different, bro. And he showed me a video of Chuck Liddell knocking out Tito Ortiz.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they heard that. I'm going to keep the headphones on so I don't get embarrassed by the quake. He's doing his laundry, the dirty dog.
I was going to say, for everyone that can hear the background noise, that's Brad playing COD. I've seen him get pretty vocal and yell a bit in COD. So if you hear any swear words in the background, that's him.
Nah, I've chucked these on for that. But yeah, so my best friend Evander showed me this video and I was like, wow, that's pretty savage. I'll give that a gem. And we ended up going to this gym called Ground Control, which was more of a ground fighting gym, and it was above a Chipmunks. I don't know if you guys have Chipmunks in Australia.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
a little kids playground. Play. Yeah, so I was like walking through this kids playground. I was like, oh, whoa, where are we going? And then upstairs, little did they know that these little savages upstairs were just beating each other's brains in. A real cool part of that story was my first coach called Neil Swales. He actually was on it. He was a massive in Australia. He used to fly. That was the XFC connection as well, because my first trainer, Neil Swales, he was good friends with Justin Lawrence, who was the old promoter of XFC, and he fought in XFC, won the title. He was fighting when they had like no gloves and stuff and doing, you know, crazy stuff. Yeah, he actually lost. How he finished his career was he had a dude in a triangle. He was quite like a pretty well-rounded fighter, so he was one of the first guys to do a lot of jiu-jitsu in MMA back in the day. And he had a guy in a triangle, and the guy just like spiked him real hard, and he lost all function from like the neck down for like half an hour or something crazy like that. And yeah, it was pretty bad. So he couldn't fight anymore after that. And when I linked up with that gym, he was on his way out. He was about to finish up with the sport and loved the sport so much that he was doing other things like trying to become a referee and make it more of a safer sport. But he saw me and my friend, and he saw these little eager kids that wanted to learn more about the striking element of MMA. And he knew that that gym we were going to was more of a grappling gym. And he ended up staying on as a coach and a fighter sort of manager person for another 5 years because of us. So like, big shout out to my first coach, Neil Swales, because if he didn't stay on, I probably would have moved away, because I hated jiu-jitsu at first, because just getting smushed by all these big dudes. It took me about a year to finally tap someone, and then I was like, yeah, this is cool. I can do this as well as punch people. So I did that I was at that gym for the first 5 years of my career. So I was 19, maybe 20 when I got to CKB. But just before I got to CKB was when I went to Australia and things started to get really serious in terms of fighting, because I was still at school. I was studying to become an architect. That was like my dream at the time. And slowly the fighting took over from that, just because of the amount of time that I was investing in it. I was playing rugby as well. I was doing pretty good in my final 2 years. I was the captain of my team and we went to the finals. But both years we fell short in the final, and it came down to like fitness. Like our team just didn't have the fitness, and it pissed me off, because I was getting up every morning 6 a.m. doing running and doing all these sprints and stuff for my own fitness, and I kept offering it to the boys and they would do it at the start of the season, and as the season got on they would be like, oh, you know, we're fit enough. But I had fights and stuff, so that was my motivation to keep doing the training as well as the rugby. But yeah, after the second year of us losing to the finals, I like packed it in, stopped doing rugby and just focused on an individual sport. But even then I still wasn't thinking I was going to go anywhere with it. I thought I was just doing it to become like a little savage that would be able to defend myself. And I think I went undefeated for almost 7 years.
Yeah, ages, right?
Yeah, and everything too. I had like kickboxing fights, boxing fights. I think I only lost in a couple grappling matches. I actually ran into Kai France.
Wrestling or something?
Like in a no-gi jiu-jitsu comp, and I smoked him. And I ran into, who was another good, a former teammate of Brad's, Mark Abelardo. He beat me. That was one of my first losses in jiu-jitsu comp. But yeah, so I ended up becoming, I'm 19 or 20, undefeated for like 7 years. Then I ran into another savage of this guy, Adrian Rodriguez, who's a boxer now. He's got a few titles, like New South Wales boxing titles. And we had a war that ended up becoming, I think it was the Australian, it was like Fight of the Year.
Yeah. That was Australia, on XFC, right, hey?
That was XFC, yeah. That was for the Australian, the XFC title. And that was, I had a few hard fights before that, but that was a pretty hard fight. And that kind of solidified in my mind that I wanted that I could do something with this, go far with it. And that's when I made the move from ground control to city kickboxing after that fight, after my first loss. And from there, went on to win a few more fights, knock a few more guys out. I defeated Adrian Rodriguez, a few other guys in XFC. And this is all with City Kickboxing now. So from 20 onwards, I was with City Kickboxing. And then we started fighting in China. Started fighting in China with Israel, and had a few fights here in New Zealand with other Chinese fighters. And then in 2017, I got the call from the UFC, but it was a bit of
predicament.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a weird, it's like incestuous. That's a word I was going to use.
Yeah, very interesting. That was going to be my next question, is your UFC debut, because at the time, Sugar Shane Young was the thing. You were the guy in New Zealand, like, across XFC, like you were the guy. And then when you got called up, yeah, talk us through it, like the whole situation, like what you were doing when you got the call. And then for people who don't know, tell us why it was, yeah, a bit of an incestuous situation.
Well, there's two parts to that story. The first part is like what most everyone knows is like, so I'd had a few, I think I'd had only two losses. One was to Adrian Rodriguez. And then I lost to Damian Brown because I had a last minute, I was going to defend my Australian title at featherweight. And then like a week and a half before that, the guy I was going to fight pulled out and I was still ready to fight. So Damian Brown, who's a former UFC fighter, is a good lad.
Shout out to Brownie.
He was fighting for the lightweight title. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go and be boisterous and bold and just move up a weight class on a week and a half's notice against this 34-year-old veteran, army veteran. Yeah. I was like, yeah, like, let's go. So it was I had a close fight with him. So that was I got my second loss in that one in my professional career. Then racked up a few more wins. Then I met a guy called Wang Guan, the Dongbei Tiger. And that loss I really attribute to like losing mentally, because I got told so much stuff about this guy before I ever met him. I was like, oh, he's this UFC, pre-UFC fighter. But that was my first inkling of like, man, these dudes are, I'm at that level now where it's that these guys are getting called up to the UFC. But he was like, no, I don't want to fight in the UFC. This Chinese guy's, I make enough money doing this. So I kind of mind fucked myself with that one because I didn't, yeah. But so I lost him. It was a close loss, and then racked up a few more wins. I think I was on like a 7-fight win streak, and then I come to my UFC debut. So I hadn't fought in 6 months, but I'd won 7 fights in a row. And then I just get a call. I was living up the road from the gym at this point in this really dingy place that my good friend, my brother, Sanchai, shout out to Sanchai, was giving me. But man, that was a dingy place. I was always getting sick in the house. But so I'm just chilling and I get a call. And then Eugene, my coach Eugene's like, do you want to fight in the UFC next weekend? I was like, wait, you mean the UFC? He's like, yeah, we got a call. It's not like 100%. But would you take the fight next weekend? So this is on the Friday. So eight days before. He's like, would you take the fight? And I was like, well, fucking hope. Like, that's what we're here for, isn't it? To get in the UFC. And he's like, okay, yeah, leave it with me. And I put the phone down, like walking around. I was like, oh man, yes. This happening. This is crazy. Yeah. And then he's like, picks up the phone again. He's like, okay, yeah, it's all things. Like, and I was like, who's it with? He's like, Alexander Volkanovsky. I was like, oh, isn't that like our mate? Oh, because we were like, there was a bit of a, you know, I'd seen him. He'd come to the gym once before. I'd seen him once. And I knew like, oh, this is, you know, he's top of the line dude. He's already had a few fights in the UFC. But I thought that was like sort of, oh, we're mates, you know, because he trained a bit with the boys in Tiger. He was really good friends with Brad, who I thought was like, he is definitely CKB now. But I mean, at the time I was like, oh, that's all, we're all CKB sort of buzz. But how it worked out was that Volko's opponents kept pulling out. He had about 3 people pull out on him in like a month. And this was so 2 weeks out from the fight. They're like, man, we're going to pull this fight, but you're such a good, it was in his hometown. I think close to his hometown. It was in Sydney. So they really wanted Volko on the card. And they were like bugging him. They're like, well, can you think of anyone? And not at the time, I didn't know that this was like, it was, you know, it was a pretty good, we can swear.
Yeah, of course.
The only swear word is cunt. But he was being a good cunt and said, hey, we know this kid in New Zealand. He's really good. I know, blah, blah, blah. And he basically went out on a limb and was like, yeah, I'll fight him. And so he that decision got me into the UFC and took the fight on 8 days notice, had a pretty good showing. I just remember you saying like, man, all we need to do is not get knocked out in this fight and we're going to be good. So I was like, okay, I can do that. I got to make sure I don't get knocked out. I had a good scrap with Volko and yeah, from then on, like sort of the rest is history. And it was really cool because after that, Volko started coming over way more with City Kickboxing, so we got to exchange more knowledge. And you know, it's that all kind of came to a head, or like the weirdness of this fighting family that we have was really made obvious to us on our last trip, because we had myself and Volko he was on the same card as me, and then Jamie was on that card, and Jamie Malaki and Brad Riddell both made their UFC debut against each other as well. And then here we are 3 years later, and 2 years later also for the boys, like we're all in the bloody in this quarantine bubble together, about to go to battle as Anzacs, you know, as Australian and New Zealand Army Corps. So you couldn't write a book better than that. Yeah, story's great.
It's crazy. Hey, I was who was I talking to? I think I was talking to Jamie about this. And again, like you kind of got to credit Volko a little bit, because I think during COVID Volk couldn't come over and train with you guys. So he kind of put together this like little Aussie team. And then he, like, because in Australia, it was all very segmented. There was like a couple UFC guys here and there. And then Volk like needed to pull a team together to get that camp in for the Max fight. And so he did. And he got everyone, and everyone just stayed in close contact. And now, because Volko is so close with you guys, they're kind of merging. So it's like merging into this like superstar, like super Anzac MMA team.
Mm. Oh, even now, upon this time, I think like 5 days ago, the quarantine bubble has opened up. So now Australia and New Zealand, you can fly back and forth without having to quarantine and stuff like that. So that as well will be, you know, the future is going to be looking real good for us as a team, as an Anzac team going forward. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Be real cool. Hey, Shana, you mentioned there a couple of times, I know this is a topic close to your heart, but the importance of the mental side of this. And you said like that first fight, to quote you, you kind of mind fucked yourself, and that's why you lost it. And then obviously, as you've gone on, you've been a big advocate for mental health and everything else. And after your awesome performance in, it was Melbourne, wasn't it, in February? And you did the speech afterwards. Yeah. It was huge. And I remember you and I, because we were cutting weight and we were talking about your Instagram followers. And I remember you messaging me after that speech, and you had like 30,000 Instagram followers who just jumped up. But let's talk about that. Why is that such a close thing to your heart?
The reason why I even did that speech, or whatever post fight speech, is because I went through it, bro. Like I up until, without being too showing too much that needs to be said, like it was like I was married at a very young age with my high school sweetheart. So that alone, anyone that's been in a relationship, a real loving relationship, can understand like how much that can affect someone positively. And it did affect me positively for years. We were together almost a decade. And she was like my rock to keep pushing through fighting, you know. And then that all sort of dissolved from 23 to 24. It was like the sort of started cascading down. Oh, you're getting a visitor, bro. Oh, it must be some of those evenly macronutrient.
I was gonna say, I think that's sandwich. Hey, that can wait. Shout out to TikTok Nutrition, so I don't have to eat the hotel quarantine food.
Nice. Like I was saying, it's just it's close to my heart because I've been there. Like I was just a super what I call happy chappy. Like everything's positive. I had nothing upsetting nothing in my life that was upsetting me. You know, I was like, oh, this is just cool. Even if something bad would happen, I'd be like, man, I'm good. Nice. Like I'm fit. I'm young. I'm healthy. I feel strong. Nice. I'm living my dream, training with really good people. Got a solid partner. Nah, you know, the future seemed real bright. And then from age 24 till 25, like a solid year and a half, I just went through like a massive dark patch, and it wasn't like all it was breaking up with my partner and then guilt tripping, like all these things that like counseling, I guess, and doing well. That's one side of it, because there's two things that are massively close to my heart. One is mental health and helping people with mental health, but the second, and really the first, is my multiculture, because that was part of that actually helped me work through all of this stuff, because there's things hidden in Maori culture that we already know about this stuff, that when men like go through tough times, there's already inbuilt things built into our culture, knowing that you know, like little mechanisms that would help us. And what I did was, leading up to that fight in February 2019, I was going through my hectic, well, it's all about internal, like outside, to the outside perceiver, that, you know, like, bro, you just got in the UFC. And not only that, like you're in it with Volko, who was on his way to being the champ, and that's now your teammate, like, and he's in the same weight as you. Like, wow, it's cool to have almost a blueprint of a guy that you want to emulate right there. You got a really good team that's on its way to becoming the best team in the world. You got some of your best friends are Israel Adesanya. You know, it was like super happy, always on the lucky guy. And even that, people around me were like, I don't see why this guy is so sad. Like, yeah, you're breaking up with your wife, but, you know, it's not that big of a deal. So I went through depression. Like, I realized that, I think it was in 2018 after I'd, so there was another fight before the one in February where I knocked this guy out with the elbow, and I became the first person to carry the Tino Rangatira flag. You can see it there. The Māori flag, and you can see a quake. Don't know the
Māori quake.
Yeah, he is 100%. So I represented my Māori culture. I was the first person to speak te reo. I gave a whai kōrero and I said my whakapapa, which is just your lineage. So I said the mountain my people came from, the canoe that my people came over in, the river that we first drank from, like all this really cool, awesome stuff. And then they were like, oh, what did you just say? And I was like, oh, I just said who I'm from. Oh, sorry, where I'm from and who I am. You know, I just did what I did with my body, which is what we do when we go out and fight. We are showing people the makeup of our DNA with our fists and our feet. And that was like another big highlight. So I was like, wow, why am I, after doing all these things, a dream come true, why am I still so sad? And it was just the effects of depression. Like you don't, like you can feel all good, but it's like a just is. And so that kind of got me thinking of like, man, because I still wasn't out of it at that point. I was in it. I was in the rut, but I don't know. It must be something about my personality. But there were times where I could like pull out of it and be like, almost look at that person like it wasn't me and be like, gee, this kid has his whole life like going for him, yet he's so sad. There's got to be something else going on, like chemical things going off and stuff like that. So that started the interest before I got to Melbourne. So I started looking into that stuff. Then I found out that we have the highest youth suicide rates in New Zealand and Māori and Pacific Islanders. Like, yes, as a whole of a country we do, but it's mainly based in Māori and Pacific Islander kids. So people, kids like me, kids that are half caste Māori and Polynesian, as in like Tongan, Samoan, Niuean, Fijian, Cook Island, as well as, you know, like our Scottish, Irish, our mixed blood melting pot of a culture that we have in New Zealand. And then I started looking into it more. Then I found out it's not only like that we have this high youth suicide. So that means 18 and under. But we also had the highest numbers, like 12 and under. And I found out before that fight, up north, just north of Auckland, so like a couple hours north, some of the most beautiful beaches you've ever seen, beautiful forests you've ever seen. But that was the highest concentration. So that made me think even more. I'm like, these kids have this amazing environment around them. They're not the most rich, but you don't need money if you have this beautiful environment around you. But there were kids 11. There was an 11-year-old that took their own life. And then 3 weeks before, through friends of like young mates that I was hanging out with, who were friends of my partner at the time, so like 19. And a 9-year-old took their own life. And I was like, what's happening in a 9-year-old's life that's so bad that they want to take their own life? And that was like, made me decide like, man, what can I do? I'll just be like, I can tell them that I went through it or I'm going through it and they're not alone. And so like, I was really scared. I was way more scared to speak on that than I was for the fight. But that was my driving force. Like that whole fight, like was up. Cause when I fought Volko, I didn't know, like, I actually talked to Dan about it before Daniel Hooker walked out with me. And I was like, yeah, bro, when I get out there, I'm gonna do a whai kōrero. I'm gonna be the first person to speak te reo. And then I lost the fight, and then I was like trying to go grab the mic, and they're like, no. And then Dan's like, oi, you're only allowed to talk on the mic if you win. And I was like, mean.
I gotta win.
Even more motivation, yeah. So that's how it all culminated to me saying it in that moment. It was just because I felt all of that hard out. But when I did that, I didn't know really that, you know, it's a lifetime journey type stuff, because if the stuff going on with like suicide is not just happening in the last 10 years. It's been a generational type thing. There's lots of different reasons why, but people, it's going to be a whole generation of us sort of just shining light on it and gently just kind of going like this, just a little bit more positive. You know, I don't think by the time I die that no one will be taking their own life because of what's going on. But I think by the time I die, we would have like figured out these different ways, scientific based and like love and emotional ways as well. Like, I don't know what I mean by that, but I mean scientific. There's science based around the stuff. Like, if you don't get enough sleep, like I wasn't when I was going through depression, I just stood up and be like, oh man. Oh, if you don't get enough sleep, if you tutu with like drugs, as in like a lot of drugs and alcohol, a lot of people think that smoking weed and and smoking cigarettes and then drinking heaps of alcohol on the weekends, like, it doesn't have an effect. That will have an effect on your mental health and then physical health as well. Like, for a long time before I got into the UFC, and even while I was in the UFC, I wasn't like taking care of my physical health other than training. Like, I was training and stuff, but I wasn't getting good sleep. I wasn't like eating right. I wasn't doing those things. And the last few years I've really been focused on that, and my mental health has just been like so much better. And I'm not an expert on it. I can't be like, hey, do this, that and the other. All I can do is be like, look into it, read a book, and get out to nature and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. It's really cool. It's awesome.
No, man, it is awesome. And it's awesome for heaps of reasons. Like, one, you're using your platform to spread a good message. And two is, like, I've kind of seen you go through it, right? Like, from that fight and then go through it. And I've seen you kind of use your culture and use these other methods to, you know, positively impact your own life and come through it. So let's get into that, because some things that people may not know about you are all these other methods that you use, you know, especially your breath work. And, you know, like, you and Brad are two guys that I go to whenever I want advice about these things. And you guys are both wealth of knowledge, and you do heaps of things, you know, with the Novathor and all these other things. Let's go into that. And let's talk about these other training methods, you know, not just physical training, but mental training that you've kind of discovered in the last few years and you've used to enrich your own life.
Yeah, cool. I think there's really three. There's a few. The first two are cool. The third one is the most important and the easiest because it is the breath work. But the first one that was really cool that helped me out was a good friend, Dr. Hisham, with Novathor New Zealand. He reached out to me after the fight in February, because he is like a mental health warrior in his own way. He's promoting positive mental health through, he's the Superman of dentists, but he also has this machine called a Novathor that you lie in, and it uses the power of near infrared and infrared light to penetrate all the mitochondria in your body to basically tell your body to be young again or something. The science is like deep with it, but that was a big help because it's one of the only things that can help improve your brain, like the cells in your brain. You just like, it's like put your steroids is never a word you want to use, but I just, you know, people think, oh, you inject it and it'll get better. Like, it's like you jump in this pod for 20 minutes. And he wanted me to do it because of like mental health. He believes that it'll help with people's mental health because their brain will be healthier and the pathways will be better. And also, like, you know, we take head knocks in our sports. So he thinks that it will be good. And I believe so too. And the UFC has one, as you saw, and people probably have seen in the UFC PI, right next to the hot and cold hot and cold pools. And then there's a cryo chamber, and right there is a bloody $200,000 machine that people just think is a tanning bed because it looks like one. And it's a Novathor machine. So that's one cool thing that's helping. A second cool thing that I was using for years before I ever went through any dark patch, but I was using it like, I just thought it was a positive way to help with like mental visualization, was the float tanks, or the sensory deprivation tanks, which were made very popular by Joe Rogan and his podcasts. And yeah, I was on that bandwagon in 2015. That's how I found out about sensory deprivation tanks. But big shout out to my friend Anton Kowalski from Float Culture in New Zealand. It's just down the road. It's actually on Water Street. The place is called Water Street, which is kind of funny because you just sit in a pod, or sometimes a room or a pod, and they fill it with Epsom salts. Like, you can't see any of the Epsom salt. It just looks like water. Well, it is just water, sorry, but it's enough Epsom salt that your body floats like suspended in midair. It feels like zero gravity, and then you close the door, and then it's pitch black. So that's the sensory deprivation aspect of it, as in it's depriving your body of any sensory input, no vision. If you get to a point where you're still enough and your heartbeat, you can slow, like, not do your heartbeat so much and like not freak out, just stay calm. Then a few times I felt it where you almost can't feel your body because the water is heated to the same temperature as your skin. It's like 36 point something degrees. Yeah. And if you just get perfectly still, you can't feel the difference between like the water and yourself. it's quite buzzy. Like it's quite like a, it's a natural, like a natural euphoric trip, I guess. Or what am I saying? Isn't like a, it's just an experience that is unique and you'll never find it anywhere else unless you happen to be out in space, which one day I hope to be. Yeah, so big shout out to Float Culture. They helped hard out when I was in my good, like just happy chappy mode, but they've helped heaps since to help with mental health and just help you. I used to call it forced meditation, but that doesn't sound like good, forced meditation. But I just recommend people try that out. But the big one that you touched on that Brad and I have been working on, I'm also Brad on the scientific side of things with like Oxygen Advantage, Patrick McEwen and James Nestor, who was a journalist that wrote a book called Breath. That's like, yeah, breath work is deep. Like with Maori culture, there's a thing we always say, and I've said it at the end of all of my fights, and I say it whenever I finish a whai korero, I say, Te hei Maori ora, which means behold the breath of life. And it's like, you know, and I believe, and I've talked to other elders, I guess you would say, yeah, elders and people wiser, way wiser than I in terms of Maori culture. And that stuff's been happening for thousands of years in our culture. We've known all of these different just breathing techniques, not just for, you know, to make yourself perform better or to switch your mind to a better state, parasympathetic to sympathetic, like take over control of your autonomic nervous system to activate your vagus nerve, all these like, you know, simple, well, not simple, sorry, I mean, science-based. They're not like crazy hippie weirdo stuff, like it's just hard science. Our people have known about that, Polynesian cultures have known about that for hundreds, if not, well, definitely I believe thousands of years. But then it even goes deeper than that, and I actually started at that point. I didn't start at the where Brad is with the science side of it, of being like how you can improve your CO2 tolerance, your man, he knows so much about this stuff, like he's goes deep on it, on that side of things. How I discovered it was the sort of the hippie weirdo sort of stuff that, like, it does make you feel weird, like, as in it makes your body feel weird. And like, but my journey started with a good man called Jason Suddy, Jason Psycho Suddy, who's a former 6-time, well, once you're a world champion, you're a world champion for life. But he won 6 world titles from middleweight or super middleweight all the way up to heavyweight. That's why they called him Psycho, because it's like, crazy, why would you do that? And kickboxing, and he's from Balmoral Ligar, so that's like solid whakapapa there, or solid lineage. And he went to Sweden and met this man called Wim Hof. Wim Hof, yeah, and he's developed this method of breathing that was, it's ancient knowledge that he just discovered through, well, his story is pretty crazy. Like, I think people should just like look him up, but he discovered it through, he has like 5 kids, and him and his partner was going through depression for ages and ages, and she ended up taking her own life while they just had their 5th kid, and he was like mid to early 30s. She took her own life, and he decided then that he's going to push this thing that he discovered in himself, to, you know, this breathing technique stuff that he used to do crazy break records, swimming underwater, under freezing cold water, where it was so cold that it froze over his eyelids. It froze them and he couldn't see, and ended up missing the hole and had to like swim back and come back up. So he actually broke this record by like 10 meters, like 150 meters under ice. Sits in ice for, like covered in ice for 90 minutes, and his skin temperature doesn't change because of this breathwork technique and how he believes like the power of the human mind. He even did a thing where they injected him with a type of E. coli, and then he just kept it there. It didn't go throughout his body, just through breathing, like just through breathing and like mental control. So he's like able to do all these crazy feats that I really implore people to go and look up and research themselves to see the capabilities of the human mind and the human body. But through that, I met Jason Suddy, who I'd already known, but he was running a seminar in Auckland, and at this point I'd won that fight with the elbow, knocked out old mate, won a bonus. I was like rocking around, like I was like kind of lost in my own space, like I thought I was good, but really I was like hiding everything with with things. We'll just say that, with like activities and things and people. I was using that to mask the sadness that I was feeling. But I did the Wim Hof seminar, and I got down to like our, like we're doing these, we did a few rounds of like breathing or just lying down on the floor. And I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. But I got real deep on one, and I like, it like took me to like another place or something. Like in my head, I like went to another place and I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I felt real like euphoric on like a level where I like hadn't felt before. And I was like, oh man, this is like really good. And then something in my head told me like, you don't deserve to feel these feelings. And I was like, I started crying in front, or like not crying, but like tears came to my eyes. And I had like my good friends around me. I had Israel Adesanya next to me. I had my friend Henry Burns from Tahiti, you know, and they're like happy and they're like, and people are laughing. I was like, why am I not? And then I just said it out loud. I was like, oh, I have depression. Like it was like real simple. And I was like, oh, like it was almost like a relief, but it, like to be like, oh, you don't need to hide it anymore. Like that's all you do. Like now that you know, let's just work through it, sort of buzz. And so that's how I really sort of discovered that I wasn't as happy as everyone thought I was. Everyone was probably looking at me like, man, look at this idiot. This guy's doing like that whole thing that they talk about with fighters, like just going out all the time, like you just want to fight, being like, yeah, I'm the man. And like, yeah, they were like, yeah, you are the man, because like, what are we going to say? Like, you know, you deserve it all. But I wasn't happy, and I was hiding it all through these just going out and hanging out with the wrong people. And so, yeah, breathwork helped me there. And now, fast forward to here, now I use breathwork every day, every morning. I do Wim Hof. I do apnea training. I work on CO2 tolerance. So it's not only helping with my mental health, it's helping with my physical health for my fighting. Yeah, physical performance, mental performance as well, mental clarity. Like it goes so deep, and I think people should look at that book, Breath, by James Nestor. Look at Oxygen Advantage with Patrick McKeown. And then also when Quake has the Quake Advantage book, that'll be coming out, and that'll be probably even better than all of them, because I think the reason I really felt that stuff was because I was learning it from Jason Suddy, who's, you know, a fighters, we go to a dark place, and from that dark place, we pull out goodness. We go to a dark place, violence, and then we come out with this like peaceful message. So like for a man like that to show it to me, it was like it added that extra benefit. So when the Quake Advantage book comes out, get into that one.
What are some of the biggest things that you've learned about yourself while you're doing the breath work? Because we've had conversations, you and I both, about experiences we've had when we're doing it, and you're in there deep and you're in the moment, and you know, the CO2 levels are high. But what are some of the lessons that doing that and that you've learned about yourself that's positively affected your life and your mental health?
I always go back to my culture, my Pacific Island, Polynesian, Maori culture, which is, I just believe that's just the culture of all of us. It's indigenous Aboriginal people that realize that they are just from the mud, that we're from the dirt, and the dirt will always be here. And we're just what we call kaitiaki, which is guardians. We're just guardians of planet Earth. You know, we're not, it's, the Earth is like, we sprung out from it, and we need to take care of it, because eventually you're just going to go back into the dirt. Like they say in Lion King, the circle of life, you know, the deers are going to be eating us. Like when I do my breath work, I truly feel that stuff. And I believe it's because 1,000 years ago, one of my ancestors was doing it. And when I tap into that space, like I can almost feel them. I can almost, it's like they're breathing there with me. And like people don't have to get that weird with it, because I know that doesn't appeal to some people, like especially now, like as a man, you're like, bro, I'm too staunch. Like that's like a real like weird, and I use the word weird as in it's just different to the norm, but like you don't have to tap into it that way. You can tap into it with more so how Quake has found it, through performance, because you'll do the stuff and you'll be like, bro, my personal bests have gone up, and all I do is like controlled breathing and stuff. But yeah, and also if you think training's hard, try adding in this breathing stuff into it, bro. You think it's hard doing this? Imagine doing that and go, no breathing. Yeah. That's like makes it even harder. Yeah. But with our Wim Hof style breathing, or they call it Tummo breathing, and there's other forms of it. That's like, I guess you call it more like spiritual sort of stuff. Like, yeah, I think it exposes you to, for me, from 2018 was when I discovered it. Till now, 2021, that's been, I've had some of the craziest, by myself, you know, in my room up at my old place, like just the craziest experiences where I just been confronted with parts of myself that I didn't know that I didn't like, and like parts of other people. Like, it's just like massive counseling sessions with yourself or something. I don't really know. I don't have the vernacular, the vocabulary to explain it, because I'm only 3 years into it, and it might seem like a long time to some people, but I've been fighting for 13 years and there's still things I see. Like today I'll be training with Quake and we'll do a thing and I'll be like, whoa, that's different, you know, because the human body is so complex, the system that we have is so complex, and there's so many ways to twist it that way, break it that way, and then like, oh, if you twist it that way but then push on this, oh, it changes the whole thing. And it's the same way with breathing, and it's just about keeping that consistency and pushing through. But like the biggest, I think, the biggest thing that I had was like, people talk about like experiences and like, you know, like people want to do drugs and be like, oh bro, I want to like go see like aliens or something like that. Like without saying too much, like I've tried a little bit of stuff because I'm a 27-year-old kid.
As we all have, young, curious minds.
Exactly. And but with breathing was the first time I'd ever seen something, and to me it was like I was just doing my breath work, and I was in a sort of like, probably that was my point where I was at my lowest, and that was the point where I was coming back up. I was breathing by myself up in my room, and I'd never like seen any sort of like visual type aspects of things. Like, I've had general feelings of stuff, and like, you know, and you can, even if you're in a room with a lot of other people and you can feel the energy of the space, and you're like, wow, you can definitely feel that. And I feel like the breathing enhances that stuff. You don't dismiss that stuff. You're not like, oh, there's no such thing as energy fields. But bro, I've heard about quantum physics when I was 15. And I was like, yep, that makes sense. And then if you look into quantum physics, they talk about like how everything's just vibration and stuff. And like, so that's heavy, heavy, heavy science. And you can't dispute it. Like Einstein was like, shit, quantum's like too deep for me. You guys sort that out after I'm dead. So we can go down that track of it. But with this breathing stuff, it's like, it just makes you more open to that stuff. And like, I just had this massive experience where I was just doing my breathing, and I was like, it was like I was searching for something. Like, I just wanted something to take away, like, the fact that I was just always sad. I was always, like, upset and, like, cried. Like, I felt I was real emotional, like, real close to, like, crying for, like, a solid year, because I was just, like, real, like, I just tried to keep pressing it down. But I was doing this breathwork session, and I'm, like, my eyes are closed. I'm doing my breathing, and I see, like, as if I felt like I was a baby in a crib. And I could see a mother and a father wearing, they're called korowai, which is like the cloak. You would have seen Brad in Israel, and you would have seen them, yeah, in the porphyry at the marae, yeah. Those same things. And I could see the outline of them behind stars. And this was like, but before that, it was like I could see a fella, and it was like, God, whatever. And I was like, I'm not about, like, I haven't been about that for a long time, because I came from a Catholic, Anglican school, which I won't say the name, but I love the school, but it felt like it was really forced onto me. And because it was forced onto me, I was like, nah, gee, science is the way. Einstein. I was like, who's the bro that wrote The God Delusion? Richard Dawkins? No, he was the guy, the evolution. But I was really into, when I discovered the word atheist, I was like, yep, that's me. I'm that guy. I'm an atheist. Like, I think it's all science. Like, we're just here when we die. Like, that's it. And I was like, man, that was cool. Like, that's how I actually pushed through fighting for a lot of time, because I was like, man, I've only got one life, you know, there's nothing after this, so I want to bash this body, get as much use out of it as I can. But when I saw this like sort of vision, I saw like a thing, and I remember I had a brother that died at two, and so he was taken away from my family at two, and I was like, man, this is like, I've always battled with that all my life. I was like, what's so bad that a two, like, you know, there can't be a person creating this if they're going to take a two-year-old that was providing so much happiness to my family, which we needed it at the time before anyone came. We needed him to come here and just like make our family happy. And and he got taken away at two. And then my mum was like, had dealt with that trauma all her life. And, you know, I've seen it firsthand what that does to someone. I'm like, nah, I'm like, fuck off. That's what I remember being like, fuck off. Like, you're not there. And then it was like, it molded into like the two, almost felt like my parents, like ancient moldy parents. And I was like, oh, like they're one and the same sort of buzz. And then it like reminded me that my nanny and like, you know, we're all sort of that same space if you give it that reverence. And yeah, I guess that's when I turned religious. The breathing, the breathing.
It's interesting. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because if people are listening, and I was exactly the same, and you probably were exactly the same when you first heard about it. When you first heard it, you do think, you're like, oh man, it seems a bit too hippie. But really what it is and what you're talking about is like, especially when we talk about mental health and with youth, it's like so many people turn to say drugs and alcohol to avoid, say, having these conversations, these honest conversations, either with a counselor, with a trusted family member, or with themselves, right? And whereas the breath work is almost like an avenue where you put yourself in a comfortable position and you allow yourself to have that conversation with yourself. You allow yourself to be open. But that's the thing, is like, you need to be open to it. You need to have that open mind. You need to want to help yourself. And I guess a lot of people, Shane, this is what I want to ask you next, is because a lot of young people probably listening to this going through what you went through or going through some hardships, and they're probably going, you know what? I do want to start this and I want to, but I don't know how. I don't know how. I want to open up to myself. I want to open up to a counselor. I want to open up to my wife or my partner or whoever, or my mom and dad. How do they get started? How do they start this process?
We should include, you have like captions or whatever, and they say we should definitely include some mental health services. Like there's the depression line. I think the same would be in Australia as it is in New Zealand. So definitely that's one good place to start with a professional. Because counseling's even hard in itself too, because like I was lucky that it hit me at like a point where I was like, man, I'm ready for, I'll open up. Like I just didn't want to, and I was paying money too. So if you're going to pay money for something, you will take advantage of it. And they say, you know, there's a client, doctor, client, whatever, confidentiality. And I was like, okay. Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm going to believe you, lady, because I'm paying you a lot of money. Well, it felt like a lot of money to do it. So I went all in, but I could definitely see us, definitely as kids, you wouldn't want to do that. So like talking to a person on the phone would be a good way. One way I would suggest is downloading, there's an app called the Wim Hof Method app. That's one cool way to get into looking into this breathing. And it's relatively safe. Like there's, as long as you're doing it like on your bed, laying flat, there's no water around you, or not like a burning pit of fire next to you if you roll off, because there is the danger that you could pass out if you go too deep, because it's the human body can only withstand so much CO2, the oxygen thing off before it'll just like shut off. And that is like sort of, I guess, the worst thing that could happen, but I would suggest people go see their doctor first. And some, most of those kids that are already at that door, most of the time they are already like being prescribed things anyway. So talk to that person that's prescribing you that stuff and be like, hey, can I try this breathing stuff? But the other hard thing with it is that it's not like put out there enough, but it's gaining more traction with the world because of the fact of Wim Hof, that he's putting himself out there as the guinea pig, saying, hey, put all these probes on me, let's do this training. So the Wim Hof Method app, Wim Hof Method, WHM app, is another good place to start. Talking to your friends, I think us as a country have sort of created a bit more of a safer environment around it, because like people are killing themselves, and so we don't think it's funny anymore to just give people banter, because we don't know what that banter might be taken off as that person. So I believe that the environment around the world, especially with Polynesians and indigenous cultures, but not just that, like Irish, Scottish, Kiwi lads and lasses, we've created a bit more of a welcoming space to it. So talking, reaching out to people around you, definitely one would be just go sober. Don't stop trying to hide under drugs and alcohol. Like, I can speak from experience on that. It will only prolong that. And if you prolong it, like say you do it for 3 years, like I was probably there for like a year and a half, it's going to take at least that amount of time to not doing that stuff for you to be like, oh, after a year and a half, like, yes, it's been a hard year and a half of not taking that stuff. Now I'm just coming clear and seeing the stuff that I need to do. So my first advice would just be go sober, drink lots of water, try to start having healthy food, let food be thy medicine. Like I think some guy Plato said.
Socrates.
So he wasn't real apparently, wasn't it? Is that the one who might not be real that Plato made him up?
Yeah, I think Socrates was a student of Plato, so you might be on it there, yeah.
Oh, well, I remember back in classics they were saying that Socrates, Plato was definitely real, but that Socrates might have not been a real person, like might have been a figment, as like a, you know, it would be easier, I would be able to be much more open with certain things to telling you if I was like talking about someone else, like I'd say, he did this, he did that, but look at what he's doing now, but you know, it is a bit harder because I'm out in the public space, and I also don't want to trip up because kids will just take one part of it and then just run with that part because that in that space and time they'll think, drugs and alcohol are the way, like I can go deep. Like it's not at all that way. I actually when I started doing this breathing, because I was like just taking, like drinking a lot, I was even smoking cigarettes, bro, because like cigarettes are a stimulus. If you don't do them for up until 25, like or 24 23, like I would take them and I'd be like, whoa, this is like coffee. And like, you know, it's like, but I realized through breathing, this will trip people out. I realized through breathing that I can feel all those feelings. I'm talking about, I'm not going to name any types of substances because they're all of them, marijuana, all of it. It's all bullshit, but you can feel all those feelings through breathing, man. And if you just put yourself in the right headspace, you can like full on be whoa, seeing like feeling colors and like out of it stuff. Because I did it with a guy called, Tom Scott, who's a really big New Zealand musician. He made a lot of rap. It's called Average Rap Band Homebrew. You might have heard of Homebrew.
Yeah.
It was the first song I walked out to when I thought Volko was called Dedicated To. And I went to the only concert of, first, but I've been to a few concerts of his, and I just prepared my mind beforehand. I was like, I'm going to do the thing where I'm going to just breathe and be sober, but I'm going to feel like I'm on all the same substances. So all these crazy kids around me, and I did it, man. Like I had people coming up to me and be like, bro, what are you on, bro? And I was like, brother, I'm on fresh air and water. And I was just like, you know, really just like into it. So I moved away from that side of things because like that's just what I needed at the time to feel like I didn't need alcohol and substances or anything to make myself feel good, because that's artificial. You know, that's your serotonin receptors in your brain just going, and I'm like, yeah, I'm so happy. But then there's always going to be a chemical come down from that. And that's what I was saying before about like if you do that stuff for a year and a half every weekend or every second weekend, there's going to be a massive chemical calm down, not just like two days. I'm talking like a year and a half of it. You slowly come down, come back to baseline, and then work your way up. So I don't need to do breath work to feel high, like euphoric high anymore. I do breath work to just connect with my culture, connect with myself, and sort of like you said, sort of be able to have those confronting conversations with myself. And also because it makes you feel good, like it makes your health better. Yeah, just why wouldn't you? Like, you can breathe like normally just for life, or you can breathe like extra to make life bloom like a beautiful flower. But got to read that book, Breath, by James Nestefano. It's so good.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful quote too that you said, to behold the breath of life, because it's exactly that. If you don't want to do breath work for any other reason, do it because for like those 2 to 3 seconds of tranquility that you will have. It's just physiologically impossible not to have it afterwards, and then start your day like that, and just do it for 5 minutes and start your day introspectively and just feel good. Like you'll feel good. I guarantee if you do it when you wake up in the morning, do it for 5 minutes, you'll feel way better than if you have 3 cups of coffee and watch, I don't know, whatever morning show and get all the propaganda and whatnot.
Oh, cold showers as well. Cold shower. First thing, if there's a kid watching this, like, man, I feel a thing. Bro, get your butt in the cold shower right now. Stay in there for 2 minutes. 2 whole minutes. Think about me while you're doing it. Be like, ah, oh, Shane's here. It's good. 2 minutes in the cold shower. And it'll, there's another thing. So some people translate Tihei Moriora to behold the sneeze of life, the sneeze. And I like that because it's an involuntary thing. You know, it's like something made you sneeze. You know, and have you ever had a sneeze that didn't feel good?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Unless you're like one of those, like, it's like, you know, like a sneeze attack. But man, sneezing feels good. So get into the cold shower. One more, if like back to like, if people are looking at this for like wanting to watch this, be like, man, that guy talks about mental health. Why isn't he giving me any tips? I would say go have a cold shower and also do this breathing thing where you go lie on your back, put your legs up. Breathe in for 5 seconds, hold for a cup for 5 seconds, breathe out for 5 seconds, hold for five. Or just breathe in for five, breathe out for five. Do that for 5 minutes and you'll feel, your body will dip into that parasympathetic nervous system. We do it all the time at the gym because we know our bodies need to recover. So you have to put it into that parasympathetic state and you'll feel it. Give it 5 minutes and you'll feel it. Sometimes it can take less, but 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out for 5 minutes, 2 minute cold shower.
Boom. And there it is. Smoke and Shane Young's top tips, but that's it, bro. And that's exactly it. And I think that's something that so many people admire about you is that you put yourself in the public eye and you talk about this and you use your platform. Like you're a big deal in New Zealand and you have a big platform and you use it to spread this good. You use it to spread this good message. But Shano, Smoke and Shane, is there any last words that if anyone's listening to this and they go, you know what, like, I want to get this started. Is there any last words or any little bits of advice you would give them?
Well, first off, I'm called Smoke and Shane because I don't smoke. That's the big one. If they want to get started with what? With martial arts?
Breathwork, just improving themselves, really. If they're in a place and they're like, you know what? I know I can do better. I know I can be better. I want to start. What's your top tips?
Shameless plug, just follow Shane Young MMA. I got everything you need. Nah. I guess so. Like that's because I follow some people. Like I followed someone really closely, and his name's Israel Adesanya. I've followed him for about 8 years now, and it's there's a quote, and it's like, if you want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go with a team. And for me, like I find it easier to emulate people, so I would just follow me. Follow Quake 155, Brad Quake Riddell. Follow Jordy, the fight dietitian, because I know that you, myself, Brad, Israel, I know that our hearts are in the right place. And even if we make mistakes, like Israel made some big mistakes over the last couple of weeks, as probably publicly well known with his words that he spoke, but I know our hearts are in the right place and we won't lead people astray. But don't be like messaging us directly, just like copy or just, you know, just emulate trying to be good people like these bloody warriors that go out and punch and kick and knee and elbow other people in the face, but we use that violence to try to promote a message of peace.
For sure. I love it. Boom. So what we're going to do, finish off. I'm trying to finish every single podcast with these same quick fire questions that never end up being quick fire questions. So we'll try to keep the answers at 20 to 30 seconds. So let's go. I've got to find where I put Quakes down because I need to see how you compare. But first one, favorite fighter in the UFC?
Brad Quake Riddell.
Boom, that's a good one. The most influential person in your life that you've had in your life?
Brad Quake Riddell.
Brad gets the two-piece. Favorite quote?
Pain is weakness leaving the body.
Pain is weakness leaving the body. That's good. And I'm pretty sure you've said that before when we're cutting weight. Not that when we ever cut weight, it's painful.
Nah. Not at all.
Last question that I want to ask. Top tips for young aspiring fighters who were maybe their 14-year-old you, or they want to be there, or they're in a similar position. Maybe they're 20, maybe they're 25, maybe they're 30, whatever. Young fighters who want to get to where you are, what's your advice to them?
Don't be lazy. You know what I mean. They know what I mean too. If you feel that lazy, don't do it. Don't be lazy. Do the opposite. Just don't be lazy. What's the opposite of being lazy? Be proactive. Oh, here we go. I thought you said quick fire. Productive, yeah.
Now, Shano, now the purpose of this podcast is I want to give everyone like a little bit of a tidbit into the psychology of performance and high performance, because it's something people always ask me. They're like, what does Shane do? What does Brad do? What does Kai do? What does Israel do that's different? And a lot of the times, it's not the training side of it. It's hard to explain. Anyone can rock up the City Kickbox and they can go through the training schedule, but there's only so many people that could be in the top 1% in the UFC. And I always explain it's all these other things. It's everything in between the training that happens. And I've put together at the end of the podcast for each person what I think are their high performance characteristics. And I've got written down for you, number one, surround yourself with good people who are going to steer you in the right direction. Number one. Number two, connect with yourself. Be present with yourself. Number three, and that's a follow-on from this, is be present in all aspects of yourself, mental, physical, and spiritual. They're all combined. They're not separate. So be present with all of them. And number four, for Shane Young's top performance tips, don't be lazy. Anything you would add to that?
Positivity is the recipe. Find the positivity from everything. The worst thing that could happen to you, there's something about it that will lead to positive. And if you can see it in the moment, it makes it better. Even if you're like, oh, and you're like, oh, but crying loses calories.
There you go. And it helps cut weight as well. All right. Smoking Shane Young. That's a good podcast. There's so many people that are going to get so much out of that. We just gave your Instagram a quick shout out before, but just run us through your socials, your LinkedIn. If people want to connect with you, if they want to reach out to you, just give us the quick plug.
Shane Young MMA is the Instagram. Shane Young MMA is the Facebook. LinkedIn is massive. I use LinkedIn quite a lot. So potential anybody's, especially in regards to mental health stuff, because I know there's massive companies that want to help do stuff and they don't know who they could reach out to, but I'm very available on LinkedIn. So yeah, LinkedIn's massive. But Instagram's mainly the one really, because it's the ability to interact with people is really good, and also the ability to share with whatever on people. So Shane Young MMA all day.
All right, get at it, people. All right, Shane, I'll let you get back to playing COD with Quake, and thanks so much for coming on, my bro.
Good night.
And there is our chat with UFC featherweight Smokin' Shane Young. That is a chat I've been looking forward to putting out to the public for quite a long time. Shane is a really special guy, and I really admire his advocacy for mental health and youth suicide prevention. If you do find yourself in the situation where you feel like you need to talk, know that Beyond Blue, Lifeline, and the Kids Helpline all offer 24/7 phone support. Thanks for listening in, guys, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TrainAid Performance Podcast.